Welcome to the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, the 16th of March, 2017. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, all the information you'll need to take action. And let's start with the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. More than 1,200 of America's last wild buffalo have been killed this winter, and it isn't over yet. Hunting along Yellowstone's boundaries have taken the lives of more than 400 buffalo, and hunters are still in the field making kills. It's a terrible time of year to hunt. The buffalo, like other wild grazers, have used up all of their fat stores and are showing ribs and bony hips, waiting for the regreening of the earth so they can replenish their huge bodies. This is also the time of the earth when a large, harsh winter takes her toll, too. There will be many buffalo who do not survive into spring, but the government is not accounting for these deaths in their mad rush to reduce this most significant and vulnerable population. Further, hunters are still killing adult female buffalo who will begin to have their calves in about 6 weeks. All too often, Buffalo Field Patrol campaign have been heartbreaking discoveries of finding fully formed baby buffalo in their mother's gut piles. Additionally, Yellowstone National Park, shamefully complicit in Montana's livestock wars against wild buffalo, has captured close to 800 buffalo, all of whom have been or will be sent to slaughter. The trap is emptying quickly, though Yellowstone continues to attempt to capture. Recently, some buffalo have resisted these attempts, while others have not been so lucky. On Monday in Gardner, Montana, Buffalo Field Campaign patrols documented as five Yellowstone wranglers on horseback tried to trap 55 buffalo. All but one got away, running to the hills for their lives. The unfortunate mama buffalo was trapped, caught the attention of another family group of 22. Coming dangerously close to the trap, they sealed their own fate as the wranglers, hungry to capture, took advantage of the situation. Hundreds of wild buffalo are gone forever. Buffalo Field Campaign's Mike Mies and Stephanie Shea attended the second media tour of Yellowstone's trap last Thursday, where they again witnessed Yellowstone park rangers, wranglers, and biologists doing the service of the Montana Department of Livestock as they loaded wild buffalo into stock trailers heading for the slaughterhouse, then proceeded to move through the trap. It has become business as usual for these buffalo abusers, just another day in the park. They tell us they don't like doing this, that they want slaughter to end, but their actions say something else. Yellowstone National Park is not without significant power, but they have shown they are without courage. They could stand up to Montana and refuse to participate, but they don't. Their cold routine of capturing, testing, sorting, and shipping the country's national mammal to a horrific death, as they don the image of this sacred being on their uniforms and rake in millions from the people who come to adore them, has become just another day at work. They attempt to put the task of change on the public, shirking responsibility for their part in these crimes. While it is true that the current Montana law, MCA 81-2-120, is the driver behind the cumulative mismanagement plans and practices, Yellowstone should not have the luxury of passing the buck. The world's most well-known national park has astounding influence that they choose not to use. Instead, they kill America's last wild buffalo. By the end of March, this should all be over. Please continue to keep your pressure on Montana and Yellowstone. Do not ease up, be relentless, and don't accept their excuses. Laws, decisions, and management plans can be changed. Yellowstone's National Park Supervisor is Dan Wenk. His number, 307-344-2002. Once again, Dan Wenk, Yellowstone National Park Superintendent, 307-344-2002. And Montana State's governor is Steve Bullock. His number, 406-444-3111. That's 406-444-3111. And a bison cull in Yellowstone is nearing 1,000 buffalo on the year from exposing the big game found on the Earth First Newswire. A truck backed up a trailer loaded up to a loading chute as the sun crept over the Absaroka Range here Wednesday, at this set of corrals just inside the northern edge of Yellowstone National Park. Hooves splatted through an alleyway toward the trailer. A park ranger standing on a catwalk above the alleyway counted individual units of Yellowstone's population of the country's national mammal as each entered the trailer. When the trailer filled, a representative from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service placed locks on the trailer doors, a legal requirement and symbol that the trucks could travel on Montana's roads. This routine played out three times, and when the final trailer was loaded and sealed, the trucks took off. Another 45 Yellowstone bison off to the slaughterhouses, where they'll become meat for various Native American tribes. But that wasn't the end of the day for workers here. There were another 60 or so to prepare for shipment. It was just another day at the park's Stevens Creek Capture Facility, where bison are caught for slaughter each year. Park officials brought a group of bison advocates here Wednesday to watch. This season has been busier than the last, as harsh winter conditions have pushed more bison downhill from Mammoth Hot Springs than in recent years. The number of bison killed is approaching 1,000. And the winter's not over, said Rick Wallen, Yellowstone bison biologist. This all happens because of an agreement between the state of Montana and the park that calls for a population of 3,000 bison in the Yellowstone area. Around 5,500 live here now. Officials want to remove as many as 1,400 from the population this year. They cull the herd through public hunting and shipping bison to slaughter. Whether enough bison can be killed to reach the goal depends on how many bison migrate into the Gardner Basin, where the trap is, and one place where they can be legally hunted. Both hunters and the slaughter operation have reaped benefits of this year's large migration. Andrea Jones, a spokeswoman for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, said hunters from five tribal nations and some licensed through the state have a confirmed take of 417 bison this winter. Wallen said roughly 650 bison have been caught for slaughter so far and about 400 have been shipped, an average of roughly 100 per week since the beginning of February. That means they are approaching the goal and more shipments are scheduled and capture for slaughter is scheduled to run through March. They may reach a point where the work can stop. We're going to have to make some hard decisions, Wallen said. Shipping bison to slaughter has long been controversial, and some of the most outspoken critics of the practice happened to watch it on Wednesday. Once the trucks full of bison left, the spectators were back on the tour bus. They watched from inside the bus as a vintage Chevy Blazer and four Rangers on horseback lined up behind a corral full of bison. They call this domestication before assassination, said Mike Mees of the Buffalo Field Campaign. The SUV and the men on horseback chased the bison into the narrow alleyways of the facility and into a holding pen. One by one, the bison entered a hydraulic squeeze chute. Before operations began this year, park officials stamped parts of the chute with 2016-2017 in white lettering. They put that there so the photos from the operations correlate with the correct year. That grew out of displeasure with old photos of bison wearing nose tongs surfacing online. Nose tongs haven't been used here since the mid-2000s, park spokeswoman Morgan Worthen said. Instead, the machine turns bison's heads to one side. Biologists drew blood samples they'll use to gather information on the prevalence of brucellosis in the population. Brucellosis is a disease that can cause animals to abort and is part of the reason for limits placed on bison. Cattle producers worry bison could lead to transmit the disease to their herds, and even the perception of disease risk near their herds could subject ranchers to increased testing to ensure meat from infected animals doesn't end up in grocery stores. The disease passed primarily through afterbirth. About half of Yellowstone's bison are believed to have been exposed to the disease, though exposure doesn't mean infection. Elk have the disease and transmit it, but there has never been a documented case of bison transmitting the disease to livestock. A very small number of animals are truly threatening, Wallen said. After the blood sample is taken, the machine weighs the animals, then the animal is sorted into a pen based on weight and sex. Some come in bloodied, missing a horn or with a gash on their side. Suspended above them is a ring of aluminum beer cans, Rainier in one pen, Pabst Blue Ribbon in the other. Each ring is connected to a rope stretched across the pen. When it's time to move the bison out, park employees will use the rope and beer cans to chase them. Until then, the bison wait their turn to board trailers some cold morning. And we found that story on the Earth First Newswire. And Sea Shepherd has discovered a record 66 dead tatuaba in a single net, and a dead newborn vaquita washes ashore. With a near-extinct vaquita porpoise now numbering less than 30, conservation was dealt a blow on Sunday, March 12th, when a Sea Shepherd found a dead newborn vaquita on the beach just 33 kilometers south of San Felipe in the northern area of the Gulf of California. the nonprofit Marine Conservation Society's anti-poaching ships, the motor vessel Farley Mowat and Sam Simon, have been patrolling the Upper Gulf since last fall as part of Operation Milagro 3 to save the vaquita and the endangered Totoaba bass. The body of a second adult vaquita was reported to the crew not far from where the neonatal was found, but after several days of searching by the crew, it has yet to be located. However, the locals who spotted it took pictures and gave them to Sea Shepherd Conservation Societies in hopes that its body would still be found. Sea Shepherd handed over the baby vaquita corpse to the Mexican authorities, and a necropsy will be performed to determine the cause of death. The most common cause of death in the Gulf of California for the vaquita is getting caught in one of the numerous illegal gill nets hidden underwater, set up to trap the Totoaba bass. Both the vaquita and the Totoaba are similar in size, and once the vaquita becomes entangled in the net, it is unable to reach the surface of the water to breathe, and it drowns. Under the stress of fighting for its life, a mother could have discharged the calf, hypothesized Operation Milagro campaign leader Captain Una Layol. A female vaquita gives birth to a calf approximately once every 2 years. It is not known if the adult vaquita body spotted by locals was the newborn's mother or not. The marine life devastation in the Gulf of California continued on Tuesday, March 14th, when the motor vessel Farley Mowat found and retrieved a net containing 66 dead Totoaba, and a 67th was found alive and sent free. Illegal fishermen and the Mexican criminal cartels target the Totoaba just to export its swim bladder for sale on the black market in China and Hong Kong for unsubstantiated medical properties. There it can fetch more than $20,000 per kilogram. Due to this high street value, the Totoaba bladder is frequently referred to as aquatic cocaine and is the only reason these animals are being killed. "We never found as many dead Totoaba in one net," said Captain Loyal, who was on hand to witness the destruction by the Federal Agency of the Environmental Protection after the carcasses were handed over to the Mexican government organization. "It was heartbreaking and disgusting to see so many animals die to feed Chinese demand for swim bladders. The trafficking of their swim bladder is destroying the entire ecosystem of the Gulf of California," continued Captain Loyal. "The illegal fishing activity has never been so dramatic here in the Gulf of California. We have been witnessing poachers' activities day and night. High season for Totoaba poaching is now hitting hard. It is having a huge impact on the biodiversity of this place. This is our last chance to save the species from extinction, but it seems that human ignorance and greed won't stop," added Sea Shepherd founder and CEO Captain Paul Watson. "We are on the threshold of the doorways to extermination of many marine species. If we lose the vaquita, what next? Sea Shepherd needs all the help we can get to prevent the extinction of the world's smallest and most endangered porpoise." And there has been no let-up in Cyprus purd poaching in this story by Claire Marshall of the BBC. British authorities in Cyprus have been criticized for failing to effectively tackle the poaching of songbirds on a military base there. Some 1.7 million birds were illegally killed across the Republic of Cyprus in 2016, according to the news report. More than 800,000 were killed on the British military territory that extends for around 100 square kilometers. More than 800,000 were killed on the British military. UK authorities in Cyprus said their efforts had helped to halt what had been a rising trend. The study was carried out by RSPB and BirdLife Cyprus during the autumn migration season between September and October in 2016. Within the territory is a spot where nearly half of migratory bird species from Europe, Africa, and the Middle East are thought to stop to rest, Cape Pila. According to today's report, Cape Pila is the worst spot in the country for trapping. The songbirds are sold on the black market to be pickled, roasted, or fried and eaten in secret as a local delicacy. Criminal gangs are thought to earn huge sums from the trade. Along with the British bases, the survey covered the popular holiday destination areas of Famagusta and Larnaca along the Agios Theodoros Maroni. The poachers have found that the most efficient way of trapping birds is to use a mist net strung between acacia bushes. Acacia is an invasive species that spreads like weed and is the right height and density to make an inviting roosting spot for the birds. Fake birdsong is played from MP3 players hidden in the branches, which deceives the birds into thinking it's a safe place. Then they fly straight into the near invisible nets. One net can trap as many as 400 birds. Getting rid of the bushes would make it very difficult to set effective traps, but today's report criticizes the British military authorities for not pressing ahead with plans to clear acacia bushes from the territory. An operation to remove the bushes was stopped after a protest last year when trucks were used to blockade the main road in and out of the base. Martin Harper, RSPB Conservation Director, said, "This report sadly highlights that the British base is a number one bird-killing hotspot on the whole island of Cyprus. Many much-loved garden bird species are being trapped and killed for huge profit by criminal gangs. The trappers' brazen prevention of the removal of their criminal infrastructure from the defense land could never be tolerated here in the United Kingdom." According to a spokesman for the Sovereign Base Areas, the UK is committed to tackling illegal bird crime and has pleads that the RSPB has recognized a significant increase in enforcement activity that has led to a record number of arrests, equipment seizures, prosecutions, and fines. For the second year running, we have halted the rising trend in numbers of birds killed. The spokesman also pointed out from a force of 142 officers, only 11 are dedicated to anti-poaching. However, while some poachers have been hit with fines of up to €17,000, only two or three have ever ended up in prison. The SBA is limited in what it can do to reduce the demand for the songbirds. The songbird dish is called Amelopolia, and almost all the restaurants serving it are found in the Republic. A meal of 12 birds can cost upwards of £60. A poacher can demand £1 a pound a bird. It is lucrative tax-free income. Martin Hilliker, director of BirdLife Cyprus, said, "While our latest findings clearly show that the bird-killing hotspot in Cyprus remains the Defense Department land, we cannot ignore the distasteful fact that the restaurants serving the trapped birds operate within the Cyprus Republic. Enforcement against these law-breaking restaurants has been limited at best in recent years, and the Cypriot authorities must change this." And a New Zealand river has been granted the same legal rights as a human being, in this story by Eleanor Ang Roy in Dunedin, New Zealand, as published in The Guardian and found in an Earth First Newswire. In a world first, a New Zealand river has been granted the same legal rights as a human being. The local Maori tribe of the Whanganui in the North Island has fought for the recognition of their river, the third largest in New Zealand, as an ancestor for more than 140 years. On Wednesday, hundreds of tribal representatives wept with joy when their bid to have their kin awarded legal status as a living entity was passed into law. "The reason we have taken this approach is because we consider the river an ancestor and always have," said Gerard Albert, lead negotiator for the Whanganui Iwi tribe. "We have fought to find an appropriate approximation in law so that all others can understand what, from our perspective, treating the river as a living entity is the correct way to approach it, as an indivisible whole, instead of the traditional model for the last 100 years as treating it from the perspective of ownership and management. The new status of the river means if someone abused or harmed it, the law now sees no differentiating between harming the tribe and harming the river because they are one and the same." Chris Finlayson, the Minister for Treaty of Waitangi Negotiations, said that the decision brought the longest-running litigation in New Zealand's history to an end. Te Awa Tupua have its own legal identity and with all the corresponding rights, duties, and liabilities of a legal person, said Finlayson in a statement. "The approach of granting legal personhood to a river is unique. It responds to the view of the iwi of the Whangatui River that has long recognized Te Awa Tupua and its traditions, customs, and practice. Two guardians will be appointed to act on behalf of the Whanganui River, one from the Crown and one from the Whanganui Iwi." Albert said all Maori tribes regarded themselves as part of the universe at one with and equal to the mountains, the rivers, and the seas. The new law now honored and reflected their worldview, he said, and could set a precedent for other Maori tribes in New Zealand to follow the Whanganui's footsteps. "We can trace our genealogy to the origins of the universe," said Albert, And therefore, rather than us being masters of the natural world, we are part of it. We want to live like that as our starting point, and that is not an anti-development or anti-economic use of the river, but to begin to, with the view that it is a living being, and then consider its future from that central belief. Financial redress of 80 million New Zealand dollars is included in the settlement, as well as an additional 1 million New Zealand dollars contribution toward establishing the legal framework for the river. And radioactive boars in Fukushima, Japan thwart a resident's plans to return. They descended on towns and villages, plundering crops and rampaging through homes. They occasionally attack humans. But perhaps the most dangerous of all, the marauders carry with them highly radioactive material. Hundreds of toxic wild boars have been roaming across northern Japan, where the meltdown of the Fukushima nuclear plant 6 years ago forced thousands of residents to desert their homes, pets, and livestock. Some animals, like cattle, were left to rot in their pens. As Japan prepares to lift some evacuation orders on four towns within the more than 12-mile exclusion zone around the Fukushima plant later this month, officials are struggling to clear out the contaminated boars. Wild boar meat is a delicacy in northern Japan, but animals slaughtered since the disaster are too contaminated to eat. According to tests conducted by the Japanese government, some of the boars have shown levels of the radioactive element cesium-137 that is 300 times higher than the safety standards. Officials have also expressed concern that returning residents may be attacked by the animals, some of which have settled comfortably in abandoned homes and have reportedly lost their shyness to humans. Photographs and video footage of the crisis-hit Japanese towns and villages are reminiscent of Chernobyl, where wildlife continues to thrive despite high radiation levels in the aftermath of the world's worst nuclear accident in 1986. With the absence of humans, Chernobyl in Ukraine has become a refuge for all kinds of animals, including moose, deer, brown bear, lynx, and even wolves. Since the nuclear crisis in Fukushima in 2011, video footage taken by journalists has shown packs of badly unkempt dogs scampering across roads. Rat colonies have overrun abandoned supermarkets. Farmland transformed into grassland has become the perfect habitat for wild boars and foxes. Boars have caused about $854,000 of damage to agriculture in Fukushima Prefecture, reported the Japanese newspaper Yomiuri. Local authorities in towns across Fukushima have hired teams of hunters to cull the boars. It is unclear whether those efforts will pay off or whether they are enough to dissuade former residents to return home. Authorities in the town of Tomioka say they have killed 800 so far, but officials say that is not enough, according to the Japanese news media. Latest statistics show that in the 3 years since 2014, the number of boars killed in hunts has grown from 13,000 from a low of 3,000. And the government survey last year, more than half of Fukushima's former residents said they wouldn't return, citing fears over radiation and safety of the nuclear power plant, which will take 40 years to dismantle. The local Fukushima government recently published a guidebook of suggestions to help officials tackle the wild boar problem, including building special traps and using drones to ward off the animals. It is important to set up an environment that will make it tough for the boars to live in, an official told the Yomiuri Daily newspaper. Elsewhere, the city of Nihonmatsu prepared three mass graves to dispose of 1,800 boars, but the local government says it is already running out of land. The city of Soma last year set up municipal incinerators specially designed to burn boar carcasses and filter out radioactive cesium, but the authorities said they lacked the staff to stuff the animal parts down the furnace. "We need a strong hunting plan," Hidekiyo Takiya, the mayor of Soma, told the Asahi Shimbun at the opening of the incinerator last year. "I wish for the day to come when we can eat wild game again." And take action, Isle Royal, keep it wild and let the wolves decide. The National Park Service has released its draft environmental impact statement to address the presence of wolves for the Isle Royal National Park and Wilderness in Michigan. Isle Royal National Park is an island archipelago located in the northwestern portion of Lake Superior. Established as a national park in 1940, the park consists of a main island and approximately 450 smaller islands, Congress designated about 99% of the park as wilderness under the 1976 under the Wilderness Act. Both moose and wolves are recently migrants to Isle Royale. For hundreds of years prior to the early 20th century, the dominant predator-prey dynamic on Isle Royale had been woodland caribou and Canada lynx. After wolves first came to Isle Royale about 1948, a famous predator-prey study began researching the dynamics between wolves and moose there in the late 1950s and has continued until today. This research has yielded many important ecological understandings of predator-prey dynamics. But after decades of inbreeding, the wolf population has dropped to only 2, with little likelihood that it will ever recover, and it may become extirpated from Isle Royale. The Park Service has proposed in the new DIAS to import 20 to 30 new wolves from the mainland over the 3 to 5 years for visitors and researchers who want wolves on Isle Royale and allegedly keep the moose population in check. Each wolf would be collared so researchers could track their every move. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. You can listen to a rebroadcast of this show tomorrow afternoon, that's Friday at 3 p.m., as part of our Environment Friday lineup. If you're in North Adams, Massachusetts, tune in to WNMB 107.1 on Friday at 5:30 a.m. for the Earth First Update. In Moscow, Idaho, listen to KRFP 90.3 FM on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Dade City, Florida's radio station WLSL at 92.7 FM broadcasts the Earth First Update Sundays at noon. You can go online and listen to Grateful Dread Public Radio at gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org. They broadcast the Earth First Update Sundays at 2 a.m. You can listen to KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, or Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1. Both of those stations broadcast the Earth First Update on an irregular schedule. But you can always tune in to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this show or previous shows anytime you want to. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio. It is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.